Hey friends, and welcome to the Happy Hour with Jamie Ivey podcast. I'm your host, Jamie, and I'm so glad you're here. Each week on this show, I invite a girlfriend to join me and we chat about the big things in life, the little things in life, and everything in between. You're listening to a special edition of the Happy Hour with Jamie Ivey podcast called Your Last Decade. I thought it'd be fun to talk to a few friends about what life was like for them 10 years ago. How has their life changed? What did the year 2010 bring them? And what has the last decade brought them? And also, what do they hope for in the next 10 years? Today's Your Last Decade is with my friend, Becca Harris. Now, Becca was a guest on the Happy Hour way back in 2014 for episode number 23, you guys. Forever ago. Becca is a real life friend who is one of the children's directors at the Austin Stone Community Church, where my husband and I go and serve. She's a single gal who in 2010 was at the very beginning of learning to be a part of the foster care world. That prompting led her to foster and then to adopt two preteen boys who are now both adults. Becca's last decade is full of moments that she had no way of knowing what happened. I love when I ask her, what would she do different? What would she do more of? I hope and pray that we don't hear her answer and think that it sounds very churchy, but it is very real to Becca and to me as I look back on parts of my last decade as well. Friends, I want to ask you, how are you doing? We are in the thick of shelter at home orders and seeing so many people impacted by this current pandemic. I want you to know that I've been praying for you all, and many of you have shared your prayer needs with me via social media and email. It is an honor to be in prayer for you, for your family, for our communities, for our world. Connecting you through this time has been such a gift, and I hope it has been something that is bringing joy to you as well. Please know that God is still good. He is still in control. He is still for you. He still loves you, even when things seem really hard. Friends, we are also 10 days away from starting our virtual community Bible study, which is Your Story Matters. I really hope that you'll join me and my friends as we call out the lies that keep us from sharing the story that God has written over and through our lives. Visit jamieivey.com for all the details. When you pre-order the study now for $19, you will get the 6-lesson study for the lowest price it will ever be. Plus, you're going to get a bonus teaching with myself and my husband, Aaron, discussing how to share your story with your spouse. Each of the 6 lessons include video teaching from me, a video interview with a woman just like you and I who has walked through believing lies about her story and how she's overcome them through the gospel. And then there's a PDF download for you to work through on your own. And our prayer and hope is that then you would gather with friends, probably virtually right now, and go through your answers and discuss how you are going to start to trust God for your story. We're creating an online community on Facebook so that we can connect with one another. I will be there live often as well. I believe stories change the world. I believe that we need your story to be a part of that world changing. Check out jamieivey.com to pre-order your Bible study today. Until then, here is my conversation with my friend Becca, who has an amazing story that, when looking at it through the lens of the gospel, is a beautiful God story. Here's her last decade. Hello, Becca. Welcome to Your Last Decade, the special edition of the Happy Hour, where we talk about your last decade. Welcome, Becca Harris.
Ooh, thank you, Jamie. It's good to be here.
You know, Becca, I had to look back because I was like, I really think I interviewed Becca for the Happy Hour. And I interviewed you and our mutual friend, Marish Bush. We sat in my house around my dining room table in my old house that I lived in. And it was episode number 23, which is forever ago.
Way early on in your career.
Way early on in my career, way early on in your life and what was going on. Okay, so your last decade, Becca, first of all, introduce everyone to you. If they didn't hear you on episode number 23, which you should go back and listen to Becca and Maris on number 23. We talk a lot about foster care, but introduce yourself to everybody so they know who they're listening to.
Yeah, my name is Becca Harris. I am a mom to single mom to two adult sons. They are 19 and 22. And I work at the Austin Stone as a kids director at our St. John congregation. And I've been on staff there for 12 years. So I've seen a lot of change in our church over the last decade even. So for fun, I like to cause mischief and hilarity, but I also DJ on the side, which is really fun. So
she's actually DJed our last Happy Hour Live event.
True.
Which we're so much fun to have you there, DJ Becca. Okay, question real quick. When do we start calling our children adults? 18?
I think that's what I've resolved, 18. Whether they act like it or not, that's legally, they can be arrested as adults. So I figured we start calling them adults.
That's true. Okay, I got a little bit longer, but even if they don't act like it, that's a good idea. Which it's crazy that you can vote at 18.
Yeah.
But you can still act a fool at 18 as well. So
very true. Very true. No very prefrontal true. Cortex, but they think they have it and they know everything. So
That's exactly right. Well, I'll be calling you a couple of years when I have all these adult boys. Okay. So this is your last decade, which is just looking back on where we were 10 years ago, what God's done in our past 10 years. And I was thinking about you the other day because I was like, man, Becca has been through a lot in the last decade. Your life has changed so much in the last decade, things that you probably never would have imagined or would have ever written down on paper. And so take me back to what your life looked like in 2010.
Well, in 2010, I was single and lived with some of my best friends. I actually moved out of a house of roommates, a girl roommates, and moved in with some of my best friends, Todd and Olivia, and their two kids at the time. And because I knew I was going to do something probably related to foster care, and so I thought, I'll move in with my friends, save some money. I was working at the Austin Stone. We only had one congregation back then. We were about to open our St. John congregation, which is kind of crazy. And so, yeah, just honestly footloose and fancy free in 2010. So
but at the time you probably thought this is a crazy life, but little did you know. Now you moved into them because you knew you were going to do something in foster care. Can you remind mm-hmm. me of when, what year it was that you and I went to that conference together? And
I think it might've been 2009. So
2009. Yeah. So the year before 2009, you and I went with a handful of people from our church to, what was the name of the conference?
Together for Adoption.
Together for Adoption, a conference in Nashville. And do you remember the session that you and I sat in together?
I remember sitting in a foster care session. There was like a panel, and there was particularly a woman on this panel that had graduated out of the foster care system, had never been adoptable. And I think you and I both were like in tears. I feel like we were sitting on the floor even because there was like no room in this breakout. And I mean, we were just like, where does she go for holidays? Like what does her family life look like? You know, all the things we take for granted that we get to do for family, and she didn't have that. And I just remember that the Lord definitely used that to like spark an interest in foster care for me. So.
Okay. So 2010, you're living with the Engstrom, saving money. And then when, mm-hmm. tell me when foster care even comes, besides that, you know, the conference that we went to in 2009 that was on your radar, but when did it actually for real get on your radar? You think you're going to walk down this path?
In 2010, I started doing just kind of research on what it would look like. You know, I think our church was slowly kind of progressing that way. And so I just kind of was looking into, you know, getting babysitter certified or respite care certified. And I just kind of felt the Lord nudging me in the whole process, like, hey, I want you to do the full thing. And I thought, okay. Yeah, that makes sense. I'm connected to a lot of families at our church. And so I could get foster care certified. And then if kids become adoptable, I can just connect them with families in our church. This is great. I've got some time. I got some expendable income. I could totally help. And so that's what I thought in 2010. So,
and then what led you to your boys? Let's go there.
Yeah. So I go ahead and in 2011, get certified, do my home study, do all the classes required for foster care, all the inspections and all the tests and all that stuff. And, I had set during that process I was like, okay, I want like one kid preschool, elementary school age, because that's the age of all my friends' kids. And so this will be great. And, you know, I would need them to go to school while I go to work, that kind of stuff. But in the process, because while I was doing my home study, they were like, hey, would you consider a sibling sit? And I was like, I'll be open to it, but I really just want one. And they were like, what about expanding your age range 0 to 18? And I was like, for emergency placements, like if a kid has nowhere to go in the middle of the night, sure, I can take a teenager, whatever. And then they were like, what about foster to adopt? And I was like, well, I don't really plan to adopt. But they were like, well, what if something happens? And I was like, yeah, sure. If something crazy happens, sure, just go ahead and license me all. But I want one like preschool and elementary school age kid. And so I got a couple calls here and there about placements, and none of them worked out either. By the time I was able to find a preschool for a kid to go in, another family had said yes, or other family had stepped forward or whatnot. And then in November, of 2011, I got a call from a friend of mine who worked at the agency, not from actually person who did the placements. And she was like, I've got a special case. And I was like, keep talking. She's like, there's two of them. There's, you know, one that's in the age range. And I was like, one in the age range. And she then goes on to tell me about the boys. And long story short, another missional community, a small group in our church, had already been babysitting these boys. She'd already reached out to them. And they agreed that if the boys moved into my house for foster care, that they would help babysit. And so I was like, okay, first placement, two boys, 11 and 14. This is nothing what I imagined, but hey, foster care short term. Let's move forward, you know?
I can think for like a week, you know?
Yes. I can do even a couple months. It would be fine. It'll be like a story in my life, you know? And so so the boys moved in December 16th, 2011. So
December 16th, 2011. Okay. So you are now, you have gone from, I would like it, one elementary school child to two preteen, one teenager, one preteen boys, just mm-hmm. for a couple of months. Now, we know the end of the story. We should let everyone know the end of the story. These are your boys. Like these, yep. These are your sons now.
These are my sons.
But it has been a, I don't want to put words in your mouth, and I'll let you tell us how the, you know, 9 years have been. It's been probably hard years at yep. the Harris house. And I think that's okay to say. That's okay to say, right?
Yep. That's totally accurate.
So I have a question for you before we even get into like what the last 10 years have looked like. Aaron and I have, we've had this conversation before, and I think that anyone could fill in the blank with anything and ask yourself this question. Had you known what you know now, what would that phone call have looked like?
Oh man. Okay. Well, if I just
without
saw the end
for spiritual.
Yeah. If I just saw the end that it was going to be like, hey, it's going to be this. I honestly think I would have been like, I didn't sign up for that. Like, I feel like I can only do one. This seems crazy. And so I would have said no. Now, if I could see all the story frames along the way, I would like to think maybe I would say yes. But I always, when people ask that question, I always say too, like, if you asked me if I wanted to go do it all over again, I would say no. Not that I don't love what I have now. I just don't want to live through it again.
I always say like, it's so like God to not let us see that. I mean, like,
yes.
We can't see the hard stuff, or none of us would say yes. I mean, you can ask someone if they've had a hard marriage. Would you say yes if you knew what was happening? They'd probably be like, no, but they're so grateful for where they are.
Yes,
like,
just like exactly. You said,
like, I would not have signed up to go through that. And yep. Let's be honest. Like, I always want to be super clear here. Our kids wouldn't either. Like, you know,
yep.
Like,
yep.
No one, this is not a choice that anyone had here. Whatever situation brought them to foster care, for my children that are adopted, whatever situation brought them there, no one signs up for that. No one's yep. like, yes, please let me be abandoned or whatever. So
yep.
It's hard on everybody. So I always think that's interesting is we get on the other side, or like maybe kind of limp onto the other side and say, I would never want to do that again, you know,
yep.
But it's God's kindness that he doesn't show us that at the beginning
yep.
or we wouldn't yep. have done it. Okay, cool. So foster care with your boys. I just read a book. I'm going to show it to you. Hold on. I just read a book in this quarantine time by Gina Thomas. It's called Separated by the Border.
Okay.
A birth mother, a foster mother, and a migrant child's 3,000-mile journey. And she is a foster mom, and she was fostering a daughter who was here in America, born in Honduras. Child was taken away from their parent crossing the border. Got it.
Okay. Yep.
It's so good. But she talks a lot in here about foster care. And a lot of this whole, she uses the word, which you're familiar with the word. I think maybe my listeners will be as aware, this like white savior mentality of,
yep.
I'm going to come in and I am going to, and she even talks about how we don't even sometimes realize we think this, like,
yep.
It's just because we have privilege and we have status and we have power because of lots of things. And so I want to ask you a question. You didn't even know I was going to ask you this. Have you had to journey through those kind of thinkings in these last 9 years?
Yeah, definitely. I think for me, like you were saying, it's not like I thought that going in. And I think even to some degree, I had a little bit of sobriety to be like, hey, like I'm just helping, I'm not saving. But in my like experience, there were ways that unbeknownst to me, I was trying to like rescue, mm-hmm. save, make, you know, make a situation more what I was comfortable with rather than entering into a situation and helping where they were at. And, you know, I feel like pretty early on, even in foster care. My friend was going through a similar journey of fostering teenagers, and we would text back and forth and be like, is this what it's like to go to the Nations? You're like eating different food with them, speaking a different language, learning slang we didn't know. I was learning about foods that I didn't ever eat before. I had never eaten a Takis in my life. And suddenly that was hot Cheetos and Takis were like staples in our house. Mm-hmm. We had a lot more fried chicken. And I think for me, it was like, oh, like I just didn't think about things like that. Like, I don't want to just like bring them into my culture. I want to like merge our cultures. And then I think also at the same time, I thought, oh, I'll also fix some things for them along the way and realize I have no part in the fixing.
Yeah. So, yeah. What has been in the last 9 years as becoming a mom to, you know, preteen, teenage boys overnight, which you didn't actually become a mom overnight. You can tell the story of how that happened after this. But also, what has been one of the, like, would you say hands down the hardest thing that you've had to walk through in the past 10 years?
1 in 8. That's how many people have worked at a McDonald's. We'll serve millions the best Big Mac and best birthday party they've ever had. Who haven't just seen kids graduate from a Happy Meal, but have gotten help graduating themselves. Because they know the skills learned here.
Bienvenidos. Welcome to English Under the Arches.
Can help you grow from here or keep growing here.
Hi, welcome to McDonald's.
1 in 8 start at McDonald's. And where you start stays with you.
If you don't know it, guys, I'm a Texas girl through and through. I've lived here most of my life. I was born here and I love traveling. Here's why I love traveling throughout Texas, because it has a vast landscape of cultures, regions, destinations, and activities, which means there's an infinite number of different travel experiences. And no two travelers are exactly alike, and it means that no two trips should be either. If you're a beach person, well, you can have fun under the sun with Texas's 350 miles of coastline. If you're more of a rugged vacation type, there are campgrounds, hiking trails, and state parks galore. And foodies cannot get enough of Texas's world-famous barbecue and Tex-Mex. Enjoy live music, visit internationally recognized art museums, and check out thrilling cowboy experiences. And now, Travel Texas offers a one-of-a-kind online trip builder that allows users to generate a custom, visually led trip matched to their unique interest. Guys, come visit my state. Visit traveltexas.com/get-your-own to get the only trip to Texas that matters. Yours. That's traveltexas.com/get-your-own.
We're in a period of rapid change, and sometimes it can feel like things are spinning out of control. With political tensions, anxiety, and loneliness rising, and questions about how to live a good life on everyone's mind, finding answers can seem harder than ever. For millennia, spiritual thinkers have offered wisdom and tools to help people find their way in trying times, advice that even a scientist like me, Dave DeSteno, is finding have a lot to offer. To join the conversation, look for How God Works wherever you listen to podcasts.
I think the hardest thing, I'm trying to think of the best way to explain it. I think in my mind, honestly, I didn't know what was coming. And so there was like a season, particularly with my oldest, that was just really hard. His senior year, as he's growing into adulthood and freedom, you know, I think it was just a really hard time. And I know a lot of parents fear that. So when I share what like happened here, I feel like I want to, you know, tell people we also have a lot of trauma in our household. So this isn't going to be everybody's senior year experience. I do think there's some normality to it, but I think ours was exacerbated by trauma and figuring out who he was. And so, but yeah, second semester of senior year just really took a deep dive into the party scene, which led into a deep dive into the drug scene. And he hit it for a while, bounced in and out for a while, and even went off to college, but then found it there. Came back and then found it again. And so there was just a lot of ups and downs. And I just had literally no idea. I mean, people kept being like, what are you going to do? Or how do you help? And I would literally be like, I don't know. Yeah. And I just remember being like paralyzed. I remember lots of nights sitting on my couch with my youngest, because he's also experiencing this. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to parent him through it, but also parent my oldest and take care of myself. And there would be lots of nights of like eating cookie dough and watching Parks and Rec because I just didn't know what to do. Yeah. And, you know, we had people that came alongside and helped where they could, but I didn't even know how to ask for help, and they didn't know how I needed help. And so it was like a really, really hard, probably year and a half. And I don't think we're out of it. He's clean and doing much better, but there's still ups and downs and patterns and things. But I think I just didn't know how much, like, I think so much of his journey into drugs was a coping mechanism that he needed, figuring out who he was and the things he wanted and the felt needs he had that he hadn't been able to express. And I didn't know that. And also, even if I had, if he doesn't know those things and isn't willing to seek help on those, there's nothing I can do, which was another hard lesson for me to learn. And so that was just really hard, a really hard season.
How was that, walking through that season? I think that what we're about to talk about right now, a lot of people could relate to, whether their children came to them through foster care, domestic adoption, biological grandkids, whatever. How is that as being a single mom and B, working in ministry?
I always say, obviously the Lord knew what he was doing, but thankful for our church and working in ministry. I think I fought a lot on the, wow, my kid's doing all the things everyone fears. And also I work for a church, so it looks like, do I even disciple my kids at home? Do I even try? So I think I wrestled with that a lot, and it took me out of being as productive as I wanted to be at work. But our church was so gracious in coming alongside and supporting me in that season. There were several periods of time I thought, I'm going to get called into a meeting and they're going to be like, hey, since you're not able to do so much because home life is so draining right now, which we understand and pray for, but we're going to have to let you go. I really thought that would be a conversation. It never was. They were always so gracious and so helpful. And then I think as single mom, I really multiple times found myself like almost shaking my fist at the Lord. Like, if you would just bring someone to help, like, I think if these boys had a steady male figure, a steady father in their life, some of these needs, it seems to me, wouldn't be as bad, or there would be someone else to help tag team them. Or when I'm exhausted, there would be someone else that would be like, hey, I can step in here. And so I really had to wrestle with the Lord. Like, I was like, I, in my mind, know you're good, but sometimes how I feel doesn't feel like you're good. It feels like you kind of forgot about us, or you left us without a tool that we needed. And I just kind of felt like the Lord, as I felt so inadequate and empty, and often like I literally don't know what to do, I just kept feeling him be like, I know, but I do. Like, I chose you. I chose this situation for you and the boys. It's for the best. I just need you to trust me, even though it doesn't feel that way. There's no end in sight. I think that was hard for me. I also was like, if you could give me a deadline, like, hey, this will be over by August, then I'll be like, all right, I can pull up my bootstraps. We're good. But the fact that it kept going up and down, up and down, up and down was really hard for me. And so I just felt like, you know, and I don't really know a lot of other single parents. And so it was like, you know, people were trying to help and step in where they could, but it felt hard that not everyone could empathize on the level I wanted. But the Lord was also kind to be like, hey, but like, you have me who is able to empathize with all of your weakness. Like, Jesus came and he was rejected. He was lived a hard life. He did these things. So like, lean into me. I know these things more than you're like looking for someone else to swoop in and help. And I honestly,
pretty ugly sometimes.
Oh, 100%, 100% ugly. I mean, it was like an ugly stumbling walk. I feel like my journal, if you go back and read it, you're like, was I even a believer during this time? So,
yeah, but that's, I mean, I think that we all have seasons where we look and go, God, this doesn't feel like the best plan. Like, I just, I trust you. And like, my head knows that this feels like the suckiest thing that you could have ever done for us. And that's hard, but you did see like some tangible ways that God provided for you and your boys. Like, what were some of those things that you just like, this is only God?
Well, first of all, like from the get-go, I kind of mentioned this when I was talking earlier, there was a missional community, a small group at our church who was all licensed to babysit. And so from the get-go, as the boys moved in, the Lord was like, I'm already bringing a community of like 15 to 20 people who are going to be active and watching your boys and helping with your boys. And so at times when I felt alone and I was like, what are you doing? I was like, wait, you actually have provided people. I need to see that. And then honestly, financially, I just couldn't afford, especially once the state payments stopped for foster care, I couldn't afford to continue on our lifestyle. Like, I was just, I couldn't save. I couldn't you know, I was like, I can make our budget work, but I can't save for a new car or a house or these things, and felt really stuck. And times, honestly, the bills weren't even going to be met. And every time God would put on somebody's heart to give us money, or we have been given three cars, which is crazy to me. In fact, just a couple months ago, I was freaking out about finances, and I'm driving a Volvo that was given to me, and I'm like freaking out and all this stuff. And I just felt like the Lord was like, would you please look at what you're sitting in? Like, I gave this to you. I will provide for you. And then, I was like, I'd love to get into a house that's ours that I own, but I just can't, it's expensive here in Austin, and I can't get a down payment. And I work in ministry and I'm a single parent, and we felt so defeated. And the Lord rallied some people, and they gave $35,000 toward a down payment for me.
I can't even believe that. I did not know that.
Yeah. And it happened so fast. Like, I was meeting with my friend Justin, who was a realtor, and he'd been talking to a guy about a loan and what would it take for me to make it affordable. And I was just super defeated. I was like, I don't have any more expendable income. I only have this much in savings, and I could get a loan, but it was making my mortgage payment like way more than I could afford each month. And so he went behind my back sneakily and shared with some people the situation. And then he called me back and was like, hey, I got 35 more. And I was like, 3,500, thinking that was a very generous amount. Yeah. And he was like, $35,000. And I was like, I like start crying in the car. Yeah. And so, so the house we live in today was another way that God's like, hey, I'm taking care of you. I'm with you in this journey all along the way. Those have been constant Ebenezers for me. So
I love Ebenezers. If you, looking back on the past 10 years and especially your last 9 years with your boys, what is something that you look back and go, okay, looking back, I can see that I should have done this differently, or I would change this? Which, here's the deal about looking back, is I like looking back. I know you mentioned that you're not a big, like, you don't look back that much. I like looking back because for me, it does this. It goes, okay, here's where I see like God provided, like you just listed, like those are great things to remember. Yep. And then I can also see sometimes like, okay, here's what I would have done differently. And I don't do that in like a, man, I suck as a person, I'm so full of shame. I do like, okay, going forward, next time a trial hits, a tragedy hits, I'm going to remind myself, A, God was faithful, and B, this is how I want to kind of handle it differently. So what is that for you?
Yeah, I think two things come to mind when you're asking me that question. And one is, I'm such a doer, and I'm like, move forward, I want to fix a situation. Honestly, think I tried to do so much to fix things for my boys or create a perfect environment for them, which are good things. But looking back, I'm like, the lessons, especially that I've learned now walking through really hard things with them, is that I wish that I honestly, and this is going to sound very like, you know, super spiritual, but it's what I wish I would have. I wish I'd have prayed more, because the times, you know, when things like my oldest was going through is that really hard year and a half that I had nothing to do but pray. And those are when I felt the closest with the Lord. And it's actually when I started seeing most of the change in me, but then also in them, rather than when I'm trying to prepare for, okay, if he comes home and he's like this, here's how I'm going to handle each situation. Mm-hmm. And it might be this, and this is what I'll tell Jeremiah, and this is what we'll do. And this is what, you know, I would like I'd swing to my Enneagram 6 wing and plan out for all the scenarios that could happen. And I just honestly felt the Lord be like, sometimes he would be like, hey, will you just pray and I will give you the right wisdom and the words, and I'll give you the eyes to see how I'm working, or the heart to trust me when you can't. And so that's a really big one for me. And then looking back, you know, again, it's not that I regret this, because I was drowning in learning how to parent with trauma and all these things. But I just kind of wish I had done some more like rite of passage stuff with my boys. I mean, they were teenagers when I got them. So that's like a perfect time, like 13, 16, 18, and now 21, and just spoken maybe some more things into them, I think would have been really cool. I wish I had done that. And so now looking forward, I'm like, okay, but I still do have like, you know, there's one's about to be 20, one's about to be 24. So it's like, when, what other milestones can I set, or what other patterns can I do with them looking forward? Yeah. You know,
it's funny how you mentioned that, and you said, but you were drowning. I too look back on the first handful of years that that we were a family of six, and I use the word drowning a lot. And I think all of us were drowning. Like I say this all the time on the show, is that about 6 years ago, God was so kind to show me that it wasn't just hard for me, but it was also hard for my children. And I think that's one of the biggest things I have. I'm thankful that God showed me over the past decade is that this woe is me did not work anymore. You know, everyone's having a hard time around here. But I laugh sometimes, Becca, because we'll be at the dining room, we'll be eating dinner or something, and we'll mention something that happened in those first 2 years, and like a life thing, nothing bad. And my kids will be like, thank you. Like, trauma makes you forget things. And so I'm like, just thank you that there are a few memories from those first 2 years, because it was not my A game, is all I got to say about that. I was drowning. We're all drowning. Yep. Everyone's drowning. Yep. And when you're drowning, you do crazy things, you know? Yep. And so that's kind of how it felt, but yes. Okay. So that was your last decade, which I'm thankful for you sharing it, because even though like we have trauma in our family, but even though people, they may not have any trauma, their family, they might've made three babies and, you know, just going about their day. But I think parenting has a lot of expectations that we bring to the table. And when they don't happen, we feel like a bad parent, or like God forgot us, or like our kids are bad, or things like that. And I am really thankful for this conversation, because I think it's a reminder that we can do everything that we think to the best of our ability, and our kids make their own choices.
Yep.
And Aaron tells me all the time, he's like, we can't save our kids and we can't damn them to hell. Like it is, we will do our best and they will be responsible for themselves as well. So someone might need to hear that today.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, no, I think it's a burden that we sometimes pick up as parents, because we care so much about our kids and we want to do it right. And we know it's a big thing that God's entrusted us with. We don't take it lightly. But when we swing over to the side where we feel like it is dependent on us, is when we really begin to err, you know, instead of it's the power of God through us, we're just ambassadors to our kids. And he's working in each of our kids individually. And so
and I can pick up that thing of like, I'm personally responsible that these kids love Jesus and don't act a fool in public or at home.
Yep.
So we'll see how well that works out for me. It's not, by the way. Okay. So Becca, that was your last 10 years. What do you look forward to in the next 10?
Man, it's kind of fun to like dream. I mean, who knows, right? I mean, in 2010, I would have never said this was what I look forward to or dream about. But as I think, especially in relation to my family, just thinking like, hey, my sons could likely get married in the next 10 years. I mean, I could get married in the next 10 years if we're honest, but I've been hoping for that for a long time. So we'll see. I could become a grandparent, which is crazy to me. I'm only 38, but hey, you know, by the time I'm 48,
coolest
I could be a grandparent.
Ever. I know.
That's right. That's right.
Coolest grandma ever.
And so I think that's fun. And it's just kind of fun to dream about even what, like, I love our church and love what I get to do for our church, but even just to dream as our church continues to grow, are there things that I could be a part of in family ministries that would help our church, you know, grow or help families? And so, yeah, we'll kind of see what God does. And so put this in a time capsule and see what
we'll
I say.
Up in 10 years. See if we just happier in 10 years. Well, Becca, I'm grateful for you in ministry and as a friend and just being a voice that can say, this has been really hard, but God has always been faithful, even when it felt like he wasn't there. And so you are a walking example of that. And I think as people, we need to look around and be like, okay, I can look at Becca and think it was hard for her. And she still says at the end that God was faithful the whole time.
Yep.
So thank you for that.
Yeah. Thanks for letting me share.
You guys, I love hearing Becca's story of her last decade, that she is content and trusts the Lord with where he has her, though she would have never imagined that this is what her life would look like. And I think a lot of us could say that, you guys. My prayer is that we would take away the encouragement from Becca to be more prayerful, trusting and believing that God is in the work of bringing the changes that we are looking for. He is our hope, our strength, and wise counsel as we look forward to our next 10 years. Friends, thanks for listening to this special edition of the Happy Hour, Your Last Decade. Our hope in these shows is that you too can reflect back on your last decade. No matter how old you were 10 years ago, we want you to look back and see what God has done in your life and where he has brought you. How have you persevered? How have you screwed up? What would you do differently? And what are you so stinking proud of? Also, looking back always causes me to look forward. Friends, what do you hope to see in your next decade? Today's show was edited and mixed by the team at Podshaper, and the music was developed for the show by Matt Graham. Show notes are written by Aki Slockers. The whole thing is organized by Lindsay Sweeney. We'd love it if you enjoyed this show, if you would share it with your friends. Word of mouth is the number one way that people find out about our podcast, and we thank you for that. Friends, have a great day. Have a great weekend. We'll see you back here next Wednesday for the regular happy hour.